This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
4 weeks into the Nancy Guthrie investigation and still no suspect, no person of interest, no body, but the evidence tells a story. Was there prior visits to a home, a suspect you didn't know about a doorbell camera until he was standing in front of it, grabbing foliage, improvised attempts to cover the lens? This doesn't look like a professional operation. It looks like someone who thought they knew what they were doing and didn't. If this was a burglary that went sideways and Nancy Guthrie died during a confrontation that a perpetrator never intended to have happen, what does that person face legally right now if they come forward, if they're ever caught? Former felony prosecutor and defense attorney Eric Faddis is with us to break down what this all means. Felony murder, concealment charges, the difference between surrendering and getting caught, and whether there's any path forward for someone sitting with this or whether that window has already closed. Eric, as always, thank you for being here. Arizona has felony murder. If someone breaks into a home and a death occurs during that burglary, even if the death wasn't intended, walk us through what that charge means and why intent to kill doesn't always matter under that statute.
Yeah, that is sort of a creative law that originated decades ago, whereby, you know, if there was a commission of a felony and someone died during the course thereof, the states decided, hey, we want to punish that just like we would punish murder, because there were so many casualties that were happening during these high level felonies. And so, yeah, for example, if someone is in the commission of a felony and they didn't even intend to kill another person, but another person dies as a result of those criminal actions, even though they don't necessarily rise to the level of intent to kill, they can still qualify for felony murder, which still typically has the same severe penalties.
I guess if they catch whoever did this, it will probably be argued, if this was a B&E gone wrong, of I didn't intend to kill her. And let's say there was nothing that really took place where, you know, they took some sort of action. They didn't grab a frying pan and knock her over the head. And I'm just throwing random shit out there. There's no evidence of that. But let's say that you know, she got up out of bed, slipped, like something on her own fruition. She was startled awake, slipped, fell, hit her head, something like that. And they're like, oh, God. And she dies. Now they got a dead body. They didn't physically go in and attack the woman or see to her death. But certainly their presence caused her to be alert enough to wake up, and then all this stuff went down, and then they took a body. Does it matter the actions of the individual in a location like this if they physically were the ones that carried out the physicality that would have caused the injury that resulted in death, or just being in the presence and then whatever happened around that person if they ended up dying, even if accidental, does that still qualify under that?
For most felony murder statutes, it doesn't require an intent to kill. It doesn't require that you physically be the executioner of someone else. You know, really the idea is that if you're engaged in one of these qualifying felonies, which burglary is always a qualifying felony for felony murder, and then something horrible happens. You know, that's kind of why the law came about, is because people were engaged in committing all sorts of high-level felonies, drug stuff, eluding, kidnapping, everything under the sun, burglaries, and then unfortunately someone dies during that. Well, you don't get off the hook for that just because you didn't intend the death. That's really the purpose of the statute. And so sometimes it's easier to prove felony murder than it would be first degree murder, where you have to prove intent to kill and after deliberation.
What about hiding a body? Because obviously there ain't no body here right now. So it's somewhere and it ain't in any sort of location where it should be. That I'm sure has its own other set of charges. What might someone be looking at there in addition to this?
Oh, sure. There are a number of things that come up. It could be abuse of a corpse. It could be obstruction of an investigation. It could be destruction of evidence. There are a number of potential charges that can follow from trying to cover up some horrible act, including like disposing of a body. And so those charges are certainly very serious as well. And there are a number of other ones that this person could face, depending on whether Nancy is alive or dead.
There is a meaningful legal difference between walking into a police station today versus getting caught through DNA 6 months from now. I mean, what exactly does that difference look like in terms of what prosecutors can argue and what a judge sees at sentencing? If someone were to somehow be inspired to step up and go, yeah, I'm probably going to get caught at some point here, is there an incentive? Is there, you know, is there lesser of a penalty if someone were to come up and say, yeah, horrible thing that went terribly wrong, was not intending to kill, but yes, there is felony murder, and but they're coming, they're the ones that are going, yeah, this is what happened, I did it, versus we finally caught you 6 months later and you've put all of us and all of these resources through hell and back. It's going to be looked at a little differently, would it not?
You would sure think so. And common sense would kind of tell us, hey, and you know, the lessons we're given as children, hey, if you do something bad, you should take responsibility. You should fess up for it. And a lot of times we think that could garner some leniency or sympathy from the government. And sometimes it does. But oftentimes those benefits are never realized when a person thinks they're doing, you know, the right thing by coming in and confessing. Usually they're treated almost equally as harshly. Now, sometimes these folks can try to broker some kind of leniency before doing that through an intermediary like a like an attorney. I would hate to be the liaison for something like that. But you know, if the attorney, for example, approached the prosecutor and was like, hey, this person will come forward if you agree to something that's 40 years in prison or less, perhaps there's an agreement that could be made that could lead to such a benefit.
That's an interesting angle. How can that work? I mean, let me walk me through that, the dynamics of that, of a, let's say the person who did this gets in contact with an attorney, says, I will reveal where the body is, I will come forward, but I need to have some sort of deal on the table. Is that a thing? I mean, can that be brokered through an attorney? Would the attorney be in some sort of legal quandary? The fact that they'd be talking or negotiating with someone who is admitting to this sort of crime and they have knowledge of where they are or anything of that nature. How give me the dynamics of that, where the attorney themselves doesn't get into some sort of hot water of abetting in this sort of crime in some way, shape or form.
Oh, to be clear, I think there would be a risk on the attorney's behalf, yeah, as well, because, you know, especially if Nancy is still alive, time is of the essence. And if you're, you know, engaging in a back and forth negotiation while that clock is ticking, do you become complicit,
yeah,
in a sense? You know, and to be clear, I haven't seen this. I haven't seen this personally in a case before, but the attorney could try to be that liaison and try to say, hey, we want justice for the family. We want to resolve this for everybody involved, including my client. You know, if he comes forward, will you agree to something that's like 40 years or less? That being said, I think that subjects the attorney to potential investigation, including, like, you know, surveillance. Who is he meeting with? Who is he, mm-hmm, seeing? And even though those meetings and communications with clients are private and confidential, when the attorney is inserting themselves in such a fashion, I think that that could be eyes on the attorney as well. There could be some ethical issues that arise too. Not saying it's a great idea, just saying it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, and at this point it feels like anything could be possible in this case. Yeah, that really opens up some interesting avenues of what could happen. But first you have to have a person that is inspired enough to want to come forward, and obviously this far in they probably don't. Unless something changes here at some point. There's been a lot of issues with this investigation, and it's being argued on every end of, you know, some folks saying this is, you know, a lot of folks saying, I should say that, a lot of folks under Nanos' own administration saying, you know, no faith in him. We don't trust this. This is an ego show, things of that nature. Nanos himself denying all this, saying, no, this is, no, everything's fine. I got it handled. The FBI, some sources in there from some folks saying he should hand it all off to the FBI so they can be the lead. That hasn't happened yet, and we still have no Nancy Guthrie. This has got to be utter hell for the Guthrie family, for Savannah and her brother and her sister, as they try and navigate the waters of this. At the end of the day, when they look back on this investigation, if they can identify missteps, if ego got in the way in some way, shape, or form, are there any levers that can be pulled from the Guthrie family for any sort of recourse or any sort of consequence to action or lack of action or ego-based action? If they wanted to go after any of the authorities in this situation, I'm not saying they will or they would or they should, but when you have a lot of really obvious missteps, and if you can prove that legally, I know officers are very, very well insulated. Is there any civil course for that, or even criminal, if they were to find something that was not done properly?
You know, I think this entire saga has, of course, been terribly traumatic and disappointing for the Guthrie family. And if they went the route of trying to go after law enforcement for some kind of missteps or negligence, I think it might be equally unsatisfying. Like you mentioned, most law enforcement enjoys some degree of immunity for their official acts. And that includes those acts that suck. It includes when they make mistakes and they make errors, there's no like legal claim you can bring viably to say, hey, this law enforcement should have done better and they didn't. And now something as horrible has happened to my family. You know, you'd have to prove the final outcome of what happened. There's some evidentiary issues as well. But the long and short of it is that there are not many viable options to try to remedy any sort of misstep on behalf of law enforcement, at least for the Guthrie family.
What would you be advising the Guthrie family right now? I mean, it's not like we have a suspect or we're going to court or we're prosecuting a case or anything of that nature, but they are very much wrapped up right now in the emotion of this, and rightfully so. It's not exactly, they're not in an opportune place to be seeing two or three steps down the road of where this could all go and preparing themselves for that. And sometimes you look back two or three steps down the road and go, darn, I wish I would have done that back then. That would have made this easier. I mean, from a legal standpoint, again, not knowing, you know, where this choose your own adventure book goes, what would you be saying them to them right now as they're trying to obviously get their mother, at least her body back? Is there anything legal that they should be thinking about right now? Anything they should be preparing for down the road of the potential roads or the potential paths where this goes?
You know, what a terrible purgatory this family must be in, because, you know, there are glimmers of hope here and there, and they want to believe that their family member is still alive. They don't have any compelling evidence of that. The days drag on, and they're fearing, God, what is my mother going through? What are they putting her through? So in terms of legal steps, though, I think it was smart for them to offer the $1 million, which I heard they recently offered for information, up to $1 million. I think sort of taking the reins as best they can when, you know, the law enforcement side is not bringing about the outcomes that they need. They've got to look to other options, certainly hiring a private investigator. I presume they've already done that. But that can sometimes give rise to more leads, petitioning the government, making social media statements about it, trying to get Trump involved. I know Trump said that he would allocate federal resources towards this. I think those types of non-traditional pushes, while not necessarily legal measures, are measures that can bring about a better outcome potentially, or at least increase that likelihood.
What about to someone who's listening that has intimate knowledge? I'm not talking, hey, I think my neighbor's acting strange. I'm talking, yeah, I know my cousin did this, or they know, like, it's just however reason they know it was told to them. There's just the knowledge is there, and it's black and white. There's no question about it. They know, they're not saying anything. They don't want to blow up their family. They don't want to get in trouble themselves. They don't want to face repercussions. They don't want to be a snitch. But they also feel, you know, somewhat morally obligated of like, this is a horrible thing and this person should be held accountable. But they're looking out for their own best interests, and there's $1 million on the line that could be yours if the price is right. How How would you advise someone if they came to you and said, I know about this, I have intimate information, my own safety could be in jeopardy here if I, you know, say this publicly. I'd like to reveal this, but I need to be safe myself. And how do I get the money? Because I'm going to reveal information to you that's going to put my own safety in line, and I'm going to need that to get away. You know, it's not just like, hey, let's show up at the police station and hope that everybody just does their best. Here's the check, go run away. What would you be telling someone if they came to you and had that sort of information?
Well, I think they should certainly engage an attorney who can try to protect their best legal interests while navigating this sort of treacherous, horrible pathway of providing potential information that could lead to this 84-year-old woman's discovery and hopefully she's still alive. But I think coming forward sooner rather than later is preferable. I think the more this person waits, the more eyebrows are raised, the more condemnation they could face. I think doing it through an attorney in a private fashion can help protect their anonymity, but they got to make the payment to somebody or to some account. And there's got to be people associated with that account, most likely. And so I don't know you're going to be able to be completely anonymous. And in fact, usually providing this information contains the condition that you will continue to cooperate. And so everybody around the world is going to know your name, but they're going to know that you had this information. They're going to wonder how long have you had it before you shared it. So I think coming forward sooner rather than later is key. Brokering some protections for yourself through an attorney, like saying, hey, if I give you this, you're going to give me immunity. You're not going to prosecute me. Those kinds of things are really important.
Can the government, I mean, I don't know if you know the answer to this. I know I don't. Can the government offer some sort of protections out here for somebody like that other than just cash? Because that's going to be the bigger pull. That's going to be the draw. It's not just money that's going to make somebody talk. It's going to be knowing that they're safe. Their security is going to be number one on that list. And nothing speaks to that right now in terms of inspiring them to come forward. Is that something that maybe authorities should be putting up under the table of, look, if you got that type of information, we will protect you. We can. I've never seen that done. Not saying it hasn't been done. It's just to my knowledge. I don't know. What's your thought? Is that a lever that can even be pulled here?
You know, it seems pretty consistent with general witness protection, and most law enforcement agencies have that option, especially the FBI. Mm-hmm. And so the government could sweeten the deal in that sense and say, hey, if you come forward and this information promptly leads to an arrest, then we will give you immunity and we'll provide some kind of modicum of witness protection. Now, usually witness protection happens after the legal proceedings are done. So it's not like they could keep this person anonymous the entire time. Mm-hmm. Even in confidential informant cases, usually the government has to disclose that informant if the case is going to trial. Yeah. So there are some protections, but they are not absolute. And this person still could be subject to, some kind of negative outcome for engaging in this.
And then you're relying on the government not to F it up. Which is the big roll of the dice. And if we're looking so far at what they're just trying to do with what's in their own control, that's not a big, bill of faith where you're like, oh, these they seem to really know what they're doing. They're not possibly going to screw up my involvement or me coming forward and put me in any sort of danger. That's why all these things matter. You have to inspire the person to come forward, and it's like everything is working against that. But it is a roll of the dice, and there are possible paths forward. Hopefully someone can do that. Your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube and on our Substack. The links are in the description. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts on where this is all going.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.